Ladies and gentlemen, you are live.
Good evening. This is Mark Blackford. I am the Vice Chairman of the Harbor Advisory Board, and this is the meeting of the Harbor Advisory Board. It's a regular meeting happening on Thursday, September 3rd, 2020, 5:30 p.m., held via teleconference due to our COVID concerns. We do have a quorum here, having four members of the board present. And Eric, I believe you have a couple of individuals that we'd like to dedicate our moment of silence to.
Yes, and I think establishing the quorum, need to name who we have here.
Well, we have myself, Mark Blackford. I believe we have Cherise Hansen. Is that correct? Speak up.
Yes.
Dana McClish. Dana, are you present? Here.
Yes.
And our fourth individual from the fishing community, who do we have present?
Owen Hackelman.
Owen, welcome.
Thank you.
And that establishes our quorum.
So, dedicate the moment of silence. It's been probably a couple of months now, but we've had a couple of individuals pass in the recent couple of months. And the first is Rita Anderson, clerk of the Anderson family, the Anderson Inn, passed away maybe a couple months ago now at this point. Mother of Roger, Jeff, and Molly Anderson is still operating the Anderson Inn, so I'd like to dedicate it to her. And also Reg Wibley. Reg founded Associated Pacific Constructors down on the south end of the Embarcadero back in the late 70s, early 80s, operated that business until about 6 or 8 years ago when he retired and sold it. And he recently passed rather unexpectedly. So I'd like to dedicate it to those two individuals.
As such, we'll now observe a moment of silence. Thank you. Next on our agenda would be the Pledge of Allegiance, and we're going to bypass that as it would be awkward at best to be able to establish that. We have the Chair Advisory Board and Liaison Announcements and Presentations. First, I'd like to announce that our August 13th special HAB meeting was canceled due to a lack of a quorum. Moving on, that's all I have with regard to announcements. Cherise, do you have anything to announce?
I do not.
Dana, any new news?
I'll just say that during this COVID social distancing and that the recreational boaters have been somewhat active, especially sport fishing. Paddlers abound on the bay. And there's been some ocean. I know there was a race and a group that went up to San Simeon recently. And we have transients coming into the dock at the yacht club. Otherwise, the yacht club's pretty much closed down. So at least there are some good social distancing activities going on the water. That's it.
Thank you. Owen, how has our fishing season been progressing due to COVID?
Well, the markets were pretty bad for a couple of months, and they're still not great, but everything's kind of starting to creak along a little bit, so that's encouraging. Everybody's kind of on limits from their different buyers, but I think that the albacore fishing has been okay, and I think there's still a decent market for that.
Thank you. And our board member liaison, anything to report?
I can tell you, you probably already know that the city is really working hard on the fact that we've got so many tourists coming into town. And so we do have a mask hero campaign, really trying to encourage our tourists to wear masks and to socially distance. I'm sure you've seen all the signs that the city has put up all around town, really. And then we recently started a trash campaign because trash has been a huge issue, especially with mostly takeout dining. And so we're adding staff for this weekend to be able to pick up the trash. And we're trying to encourage our visitors to actually use trash cans. So we're not encouraging people to come here, but they certainly are coming in droves. And so it's been challenging for the city, and I'm sure Eric has something to say about that as well. So thank you.
Yeah. So
go ahead, Mark.
I hope they're all coming based on the fact that they're enjoying themselves rather than fleeing the fires up north. I know we've had a few people coming in that reason. Eric?
Yeah, it's been really crowded. I mean, everybody's, you know, most people are traveling domestically, and the beaches and the mountains are the two places they're going, with exception with all the mountains that are on fire. And with the triple digits over in the valley and even just over the hill here, we've had a lot of people. They've been pretty good. You know, the distancing's going okay with all the campaigns. Just keep reminding people, you know, have patience. The Rock is beginning, traffic has been getting ridiculously crowded. We've been having gridlock coming and going there on weekends. So people need to have patience and plan accordingly, and maybe park a little bit on the outskirts and walk in, just because the Rock has been getting so crowded. But we'll see how it goes this weekend.
All right. We don't have any presentations scheduled for tonight. So we're moving on. We do allow public comment. I don't believe we have anybody logged in for public comment. Is that correct?
That is correct. I do not see anyone in the queue for public comment currently.
Thank you. I just wanted to remind everybody that may be watching on television or listening in via phone that we are doing this via Zoom, and we are broadcasting on Channel 20 locally. And it's also streamed on the city's website if you care to participate in any of those three manners in observing it. If you wish to participate in a future meeting that we're holding via Zoom, we will not have a physical location for you to attend the meeting, but you can either submit your questions in advance or you may watch them, of course, either on the cable channel or the website. And you may also join us via our Zoom meeting itself. And the instructions are in the agenda, which is available on the city's website. And also moving on now to our consent calendar. And would entertain a motion to accept the consent calendar as presented. Do we have a motion?
I motion to approve.
Thank you. Do we have a second?
I'll second that motion.
Thank you. All those in favor of that?
Aye.
Aye.
Is there anybody opposed to that? Hearing no opposition, we'll deem the consent calendar consented to. Moving on to business items. Number one is the update from the Boatyard and Marine Services facility. Dana, you have any news for us?
I have nothing to comment on at this time.
Terrific. Moving on from B1 to B2, the ad hoc committee. We do have some information that's coming up, I believe, later with regard to both parking and also the camping availability. And we'll hold that information for that later report. Eric, do you have anything to add with regard to the department's condition financially?
Well, just in the staff report, we, at our June special Harbor Advisory Board meeting, we were seeking some input from the board members on some budget prioritization, and asked, Chairman Reisner asked for individual members to send that in to himself or to me after the meeting, which we got, and we collated the information, and you see it in your staff report there in terms of budget priority categories. We weren't asking for Harbor Advisory Board to get into the weeds on the budget and you know, start really determining how to spend, but just from a categorization standpoint, you know, what are the priority categories. The listing you see there is the listing A through K as how they were presented on the staff report back in June. And then in bold over on the right, you see what came in, you know, first, second, third, and number one came in as public safety, obviously, and it was probably pretty unanimous. 2A and D were tied for second, and those were lease and property management and business administration and management, so sort of the business end of the department, and property management and our leases was the second priority. Number 3 was item F, environmental management. Number 4, item C on there, property, public property and facilities. In other words, all the stuff out there for the boating public and the general public that we provide, piers, sewage pump outs, parking lots, open spaces, those sorts of things. 5th on the list was general equipment, maintenance and repair, which is item J on that list. You know, our boats, equipment and whatnot. Item 6 was training and professional development. In other words, the harbor department staff, which consists of harbor patrol and a couple of administrative positions. 7 was the front office / public interface. In other words, the public part of our department, outfacing part of our department. Item 8, supplies and services, you know, the things we buy to keep the doors open and whatnot and keep things going. And item number 9 was IT, information technology, computer stuff. And then finally, number 10 was industry participation. In other words, associations and whatnot that most government folks belong to in some sort or another. So that was the ranking. We appreciate getting the input back. Should we need it, that was asked for, and in case we get to the budget point where we've really got to start cutting deeper and deeper into the budget, we'll use that as some input and guidance from the Harbor Advisory Board to bring to the council if we've got to start cutting. And really, if we do have to cut further, we're, you know, the fat's gone, we've cut muscle, and we'll be getting into bone next. So hopefully we don't have to go there.
Understood. You guys are doing a good job with what you got. Any comment from the board with regard to item D2?
No.
And it looks like we've got Lynn Meissen signed in, or at least on the phone. Lynn, are you there? You're muted if you are.
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Welcome, Lynn.
So may the record show, we've got Member Meissen on board. Excellent.
Fantastic.
So a question on that last topic is, you said if and when we have to cut to the bone, when do you anticipate having to make that kind of decision?
Well, last year's revenues, I think we've pretty much got all of our revenues in. Some rent is deferred from some of our leaseholders, and the disposition of that is not yet determined. Probably I ought to go into this more in the next item, really, where I give you some more details on it. In fact, once you hold that question, then let's bring it up on the next agenda item.
Fine.
And I'll address it there.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions with regard to item B2? All right, item B3. Eric, I think you have some significant information here.
So building on, I guess I'll probably just answer Lynn's question in my overall answer here, then I can open up for questions. Most of our numbers are in now for the year-end budget from 2019-2020, which ended June 30th. You know, revenues were obviously down because lots of things shut down. Most everything shut down in mid-March, and then things slowly opened up a little bit into the end of the fiscal year and picked up. But we definitely didn't make as much revenues as we did last year. And we've got several leaseholders that have deferred their rents, which we allowed and the city council allowed, and the final disposition of that is not yet determined. In other words, are they going to have to pay it back? Are we having some kind of rent relief? What are we going to do with that? We're working with the leaseholder association to try and determine where we're going to go with that. But really, we're, you know, revenues came in last year about $28,000, not including the lease revenues, came in about $28,000 above what we budgeted, which is our slips, moorings, T-piers, liveaboard fees, miscellaneous fees. So we're a little above budgeted, which is good. The downside is that We've got about $126,000 in deferred rents, probably a little less now since I wrote this staff report. I think we've gotten a couple more payments in. But about $120,000-$125,000 in deferred rents that we may or may not make up, depending on where we end up going with that. But our percent rents looks like they've come in about $150,000 less than budgeted, so about 35% down from what we budgeted. So that our rents, our lease rents, are the vast majority of our revenues. I think of our $2 million budget, our lease rents are about $1.6 million of that, $1.7 million of that. So obviously we depend on that largely, a lot more than the other income. So that's where we're starting to get down into the bone. Not including grants or other one-time transfers on the expense side, it looks like we spent about $100,000 less than we budgeted. That's a combination of things. One, because we're cheap, and I think we're very frugal with our money, and we treat it like our own in the department at all levels, and we try to just be as frugal as we can and not spend the city's money. And then number two, you know, when Corona started coming around in March and April and things were starting to look dire, we really started cutting back on things and cut travel and other expenses. And so, and a big part of that was employee pay cuts. Employees took 5% pay cut, department heads took a little more. So there's a lot of expenses cut back on. So we spent less than we budgeted, which is good in one sense. So how it's all the dust is going to settle, we're not sure. Like say the deferred rent, we're working on three potential options or maybe four options. Full payback over some time period, interest and penalty free. Right now the deferred rents are penalty free, interest free. Maybe a percent gross payback solution where maybe the rent is based on only the revenues instead of having the minimum applied as well. And then rent relief or rent waivers or maybe even some sort of a grant or loan program. So that's what we're looking at to try and get our leaseholders through this. One of the primary concerns of the city council is that anything passed through to our master leaseholders somehow get passed through to the subtenants as well, because obviously, you know, they're suffering just as much. So we'll see what the ongoing talks with the leaseholder group come to, and we're trying to get something to the city council here in the next couple of months, at least maybe looking at CPI and any annual appraisal increases. Maybe we can curtail those for the short term and then work out where we're going in the long term. You know, when I budgeted for this year, I pretty much took most of my expense line items and cut them back about 20%. On the revenue end, I took actuals that we knew and used most of those as carrying forward into next year, and then anticipating about a 25% cut in revenues over the year based on Corona, a bit of a guess, not knowing when things would be opening up, you know, because we know we did our budgeting in the spring and things were still pretty grim back then. At least with the pandemic, it's still grim, and we'll see how we get through it. But from the visitation standpoint, as we talked about earlier, it's kind of off the charts in a lot of regards. There are a lot of people coming here because they're going here or coming to the beach or to the mountains. So we'll see how that plays out. Some leaseholders are doing very well because of that, because of the nature of their business, and some are not doing so well. So it's a real mix, and we'll see how it turns out. But we're anticipating revenues to be down significantly, and we're just going to have to wait and see where it goes.
Eric, just as a point of reference, if the city council who is the decision maker with regard to the rents, is that correct?
Yes.
If they decide to waive rent, is that just strictly a direct hit to your department only?
Yes.
Or has that been worked out? That's so any rent waived is directly coming out of your budget?
Yep.
I see. Okay. Any board questions or concerns or comment?
I have one, Mark.
Yes, Lynn.
And that is, there were three lease options given for paying this rent. One was the full payback without interest, a percent of their revenue or rent relief, which, how do, so I would presume that those three are in order of magnitude, that a full payback would be the maximum that we could get, a percent of the revenue would be number two, and then if they decided on rent relief, that would be the least amount of money that the department could collect from the leaseholders. Is that true?
Lynn, I really didn't put them, to be honest with you, you're right. It probably is tiered that way, but I didn't put them together in that order for any particular reason. But yeah, that, from a pure dollar standpoint, you're correct. It would probably be, that's how it would go.
Okay, so when they make that decision based on one of these three, we would have a better idea of how much you're actually going to realize in terms of rent receipts.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and it's a balancing act. You know, we if there's any kind of rent relief, we've got to apply that, you know, to the budget and see what the effect will be, because it, you know, it, at some point there's going to be some cuts to services. It's, you know, which really is people, and so we've got to see where that balance is versus, yeah, these are horrible economic times, and some people are going to go out of business, and that's just, it may be the way it has to be, and we can't do much about it. I mean, and we've got to try and balance that and see what's fair across the board and what we can.
But just supposing that if A were the decision by the city council, that might be, let's say, 10% less, and B would be 20% less, and C would be 30% less. Mm-hmm. And so that would tell you how much you had to cut into your actual services or expenses as they are.
Yeah.
Now, Eric, when you're talking either about rent relief or any form of less than full payment, is that being applied across the board to all the lessees, or is it particular to an individual lessee?
Well, that's one of the questions that we've got with that leaseholder group. You know, we're working with them to try and, you know, they're doing their best to represent as much of the waterfront as possible, so we don't have to necessarily go to every single leaseholder, but come up with ideas that we can all try and agree to and get our arms around. And that's one of the questions is, you know, the example I've used in those meetings is, you know, leaseholder Z, whose revenues are up beyond, you know, maybe what they had last year, is it justified to give them some kind of rent credit when leaseholder B is down, you know, 50%? That's some of the things we're batting around. So it's whatever we do got to be applied to all the leaseholders, but there may be some sort of formulaic methodology or needs-based methodology. We just don't know yet. We're still exploring the different options with that group and putting some smart heads together to try and come up with some solutions.
Mm. Understood. Would we be hearing about that again, in, I would assume, in future weeks?
Yeah, I'll keep bringing it up in the next meeting.
Any other questions or comments with regard to business item B3?
Okay, I do.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so Eric, you mentioned that there's a couple leaseholders who haven't done their minimum lease rent payments. So as far as that goes, I know that in July, all master leaseholders have to give you their totals so you can figure out what the percentages are and what is due. Did everybody submit those forms showing their sales?
I'm pretty sure, and I'm going to probably ask Lori to step in, but I'm pretty sure everybody has submitted their forms. Some leaseholders have deferred their minimum rents going back beyond the end of the fiscal year and even a couple months into this fiscal year. And some, I believe, have deferred some of their percent rents as they reported on their forms as well. Lori?
Yeah, all the forms have been turned in.
So you know what the effects are as far as the full closure between March 15th and May 15th, right? You know what the sales were, and there's not
surprises
are as negative for that fiscal year. You know what you're going to be missing out as far as percentages go. You might just not have that money yet.
Correct. And so if it's deferred, you know, pretend there's no deferral and we were to get full payment, we would be about $150,000 down from last year.
Okay. All right. Good to know. That's all I have.
Thank you. Any further comment? Hearing none, we'll move on to item B4. Update on the Harbor Department lease management policy update process. Eric, is this considered a completed document that we have in our agenda?
The lease policy is a completed, approved item. It went to the council back on July 14th, and it was unanimously approved without any changes. We included it in the staff report as attachment one. It's a big document, largely because of all the attachments, but it's obviously larger than the original policy. And it's got some new things that we're doing, new initiatives, expanding on a fair amount of duty in it. And so as in any, you know, worthwhile policy, you don't want to just put it on the shelf. We need to effectively implement it. And we brought that discussion back to the city council, and especially in these days of COVID with reduced revenues and reduced staffing, you know, we've not refilled that administrative technician position. And so we're down on staff and what we're able to do. So we asked council, you know, where the priorities were in terms of rolling this thing out and initiating it. I mean, we're probably going to be, you know, over a year or two slowly rolling it out and initiating and implementing new and improved policy making out of it. The first two priorities we have are researching and bringing back to the council either continued an analysis of either continued in-house management of our whole leasing program. In other words, the Harbor Department running the whole leasing program from the ground up, from collecting money and calculating rents and collecting rents and negotiating with leaseholders and managing issues that come up throughout the year as a department completely in-house within the city, or some form of contracting it out to the private sector. I know we brought this to the Harbor Advisory Board, and the Harbor Advisory Board input was if you contract it out, Harbor Department still has overall oversight, which we brought to the council, and I think the council largely agrees with, but we still want to look at what form, you know, for potential different forms of private management of the leasing program. So really the start of that is a cost-benefit analysis to start looking at that and analyzing that to bring it back to the city council for consideration. We've got it slated for kind of this fall, winter. So in the next month or so, we're going to start warming back up to that once we get summer past us and start doing that analysis and figure out when that bring that back to the city council. And then the second item was conducting lease site financial and physical audits. You know, we've beefed up on our, you know, right now the lease sites, we audit every 5 years in the old policy. And then we're supposed to ongoing maintain, you know, do maintenance audits or how well our leaseholders are maintaining their lease sites physically. We're supposed to have sort of a rotating process by which to do that. And we rolled out a little new methodology where we take a set number of lease sites every year, you know, a fifth of our lease sites every year. And throughout a 5-year process, we'll roll through and audit them all financially and physically. And then every year we'll look at our lease sites and compare the percent gross sales reporting to sales tax reporting as the primary method for doing our lease audits. So really what we determined with the city council and the direction from the city council was not jumping into financial or physical audits this year, but really over the next, you know, 8 to 12 months, developing a process in which to implement that and effectively manage that auditing. And then, you know, top priority, you know, talked about in all the lease discussions, including with the Harbor Advisory Board, is the financial one with the Harbor Fund. And how do we, you know, keep the Harbor Fund whole? Because obviously the leases are the largest input of our revenues and the most important part of our revenues. But looking at other means and ways of developing and increasing revenues, you know, through the lease management policy process, we looked at, are we at market rate levels? And yes, we largely are. I mean, sure, there's some little areas for improvement. I think we tweaked our percent gross rates a little bit out of that, but we're not way under market. We're not leaving a bunch of money on the table. So there's not really a lot more to be done there unless there's new development on the waterfront. You know, most lease sites are redeveloping and building up and building out and maximizing their revenues. The little small, you know, one retail outlet lease sites are largely gone. And most of them are multifunctional and generating lots of good revenues. And so we're not going to really see more there. We're not going to really see any huge increases from the boating aspect of it, from those fees. And they're the minority of those fees anyhow, or our revenues anyhow. So we're looking at new and improved revenue sources, and the council has empowered staff to pursue a pilot waterfront RV camping program. We've run that through the HAB a couple of times. We got emergency approval from the Coastal Commission to do that. Coastal was very supportive of that when we went to them. We'll bring it back to the full commission at some point, assuming we're successful with it. We are just about ready to roll that program out. We've been for the last month and a half finalizing all our rules and regulations, getting a website put together for it, the booking system. It's been pretty involved, and I've learned a lot more about RV camping than I probably thought I was going to when I started this career. But we're getting very close. We're hoping, knock on wood, tomorrow to at least get our online presence published and open up for reservations and start taking reservations next week. Sometime. And so, and then our pilot will probably run about 4 to 6 months. So we'll probably run it through the end of the year and then get back to the council and the Coastal Commission and see where we go. We'll discuss that program a little bit further in item B5. The council's also authorized a parking study to gauge parking demand and strategies on the waterfront. It should include potential paid parking. So they've been in town over the last couple of weeks, periodically, off and on, gauging parking demand, you know, seeing what the ebb and flow is and seeing what our inventory is and doing what parking study analysts do. That item I'll discuss further in item B5 as well. And so that item also includes the rock, analyzing the rock and what can possibly be done up there. And then on July 14th, the council approved placement on the November ballot of an additional 1%. Sales tax item billed as a local recovery emergency preparedness sales tax for consideration by the voters, similar to Measure Q, which is what we have on the books now as a 1% sales tax item. So that item will hopefully result in, if passed, that item would result in a significant amount of new revenues to the city, of which we're hopeful the Harbor Fund will get some portion of. So all those things are being considered for new revenue sources, and we'll see where they go over the next, you know, 6 to 8 months.
Well, first, I'd like to congratulate you and Lori and Charisse and Ron for doing an exemplary job on that lease policy. It's really an excellent document that it's going to survive, I think, for decades to come. So I think that's a significant investment that you've provided for the city. And well, thank you for that. Any other comment from the board? Hearing none, I'll reiterate again my thanks for that policy. And moving on to item B5, update on the waterfront camping and paid parking.
Okay, let me find it here. And see, we still don't look like we have any public comment, I don't think. We probably should make sure we ask for public comment.
I asked earlier if we had anybody to make public comment, which we don't have anybody online to do so.
I do not see anybody on the queue for public comment currently.
Okay. Well, let us know if somebody jumps in.
I will be certain to do that.
Okay. So, update on a couple action items from our goals, council goals, waterfront RV camping. Like I said, we're just about ready to launch, previously approved by the council and Coastal Commission. If successful, maybe I should say when successful, we'll go back to the council for a more robust plan potentially and see where we want to take it in the future. And if we're going to move forward with it, go to the Coastal Commission for a full coastal development permit. What we've done so far, in terms of where we're doing it, we've got 19 spaces in total right now. Three of them are in the Coleman parking lot, kind of butted up against the basketball courts. Those are sort of our prime spots, our three prime spots. We have 9 spaces out by our Harbor Department storage yard out by Morrill Creek at the dirt extension of Embarcadero. It used to be the yard where we had the baiters out there baiting for the commercial fishing fleet. They left probably a year and a half ago. That service ended, and so that yard we've just been using for kind of miscellaneous storage. Well, we took down half the fence, and we're opening up 9 spaces out there. And then we've got 7 combination spaces in the Triangle parking lot, 5 of them in the northwest corner of that lot, kind of to the north of the Maritime Museum, and 2 in the southeast corner of the lot, kind of butted up against the fence back in the corner. And those we call them combination because we're allowing either RVers or tent campers to come in and occupy, either or, whichever they prefer to do. That was the Coastal Commission, as you really wanted to see the tent camping allowance in there. So we're allowing that in that lot. We're tentatively going to do some spaces in the launch ramp parking lot, but we're holding out for now. And those would be for boaters. If somebody wants to come in with their truck or RV and tow their boat and actively use their boat and camp at the same time, we're going to allow that in the launch ramp parking lot. But we've held off on implementing that, launching that just for the time being until we get our main part up and running so we can get, we've had to buy a program and build all the software inputs to it. So until we get operating for a while and get used to it and get into a rhythm, we're going to hold off on the launch ramp spaces for now. We've got some supplies and services coming. We're building picnic tables. We've got all the groundwork done, getting signs made. I've been having some graphics work done over the last couple of weeks, working with the police department. We recently, the city council passed an emergency ordinance to increase the fines for illegal camping. That ordinance was not passed and aimed at either transients, transient folks using their cars for sleeping. There's a court ruling that occurred over in Idaho that largely restricts what cities can do to prevent folks from sleeping in their cars if they have a need to sleep in their cars. But that wasn't aimed at, people vacationing in RVs. The fine for that was increased from $62 to $252. We actually had, if you've been in Morro Bay the last few weekends, you've seen there's been a lot of people, we call them poaching camping spaces, that is going out to the rock. And when they've been cited by the police department, there's actually a couple of them that said, okay, great, we'll see you again tomorrow night, because the $62 fine was nothing. It was not a deterrent at all. So we raised that up to $250 to hopefully make a deterrent. And we'll get our spaces open, then we can, route them into our spaces and maybe some of the other RV campsites in town. But they've been full. They've been chock-a-block full. That's why the people have been poaching along the waterfront. The Recreation Department's been helping us put these systems together and help us with the software. And we're getting, we're getting pretty close to being up and running. So hopefully, knock on wood, we'll be in the RV camping business next week.
Is it a one-tier fee structure?
No, we're doing it. We're still a little bit of internal discussion on the fee amount. We're not quite there with agreement on our fee, so I'm not going to announce it out there yet. but the Coleman spaces are going to be $10 or $15 more a night because that's premium right next to the water. So, yeah, we've got a little bit of a tiered system. And then in the future, once we get up and running and get used to the program and start learning how to work changes in it, we'll probably end up doing a tiered system where weekends go a little higher, holidays go a little higher, as most places do that. So we'll start following that pattern as well.
Very good. Thank you. Any comment from the board?
And then on parking and paid parking, I think I already spoke of that. Companies out there doing the studies, we'll see where that leads. And I think personally, inevitably, it's probably going to lead to some sort of, it has to include the rock. The parking study will include the rock. The Coastal Commission has initially come in and weighed in staff and said they don't agree with the city implementing paid parking on Morro Bay's waterfront, and especially out at the Rock. We'll see where the consultant ends up with their findings on demand versus supply and everything else, and we'll just take it one step at a time.
Thank you. Any other comment on B5 from the board?
Yes, I have one, Mark.
Yes, Lynn.
You said you talked about the parking assessment that's going on now. Isn't that somewhat inaccurate because of the changed conditions of COVID and the restrictions or whatever is going on?
That's a good point, Lynn. We are in an odd summer. It's not a normal summer. By any means, and these folks do this for a living, so I would assume that they're able to filter, apply the filter, whatever filters they need to ground truth the information and take out the highs and lows sort of thing, like you do with any sort of statistics keeping. You realize that the data may be skewed. I would have to assume they're well aware of that, and they know how to apply those filters to even that out.
Okay. And my second comment, and it's one I've made before, as we talked about RV camping, I would hate to see our waterfront turned into a carbon copy of Port San Luis, where over half of the area is now for RV parking and the boatyard is down to a very minimum. And I don't see that there is anything to protect it from becoming that. The money that is brought in from RV parking is so much more because of the large volume of RV camping compared to boating.
Well, at the end of our trial period, our pilot program period, which I think, towards the end of this year, maybe early next year, we will certainly be bringing back a recap, and maybe somewhere in the middle, November, we'll see. We'll certainly be bringing a recap back to the Harbor Advisory Board, and most likely it would make sense to bring, here's how it went. Here's the revenues. Here's the issues. This community's had a chance to live with this for 4, 5, 6 months. Let's take your input and see what the Harbor Advisory Board and community input is and to move forward. Right now, I think with the majority of our spaces being, somewhat, I'm not saying hidden, but not right out front and center in prominent places, I think that takeover impact will be fairly low because we're just talking, triangle lot and out by the creek in space that wasn't otherwise used for a heck of a lot else. So, but we'll see. But I would foresee bringing it back to the Harbor Advisory Board, and then it ultimately goes back to the council and the community to see what more, if anything, we want to do.
Right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Lynn. Any other further comment? All right. Hearing none. Any public comment? Anybody out there for public comment?
I do not see anybody in the queue for public comment currently.
Thank you. As such, we'll move on to item B6. This is the report on the city actions and activities in response to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Okay, so I mean, the all Eric show tonight. So the city's been very proactive in many regards. You know, early on, you know, the state of California declared an emergency. The federal government declared an emergency back in March. City of Morro Bay declared an emergency. This is a partial list in the staff report, and I'll try and just go through these a little bit. The city opened and has continued to operate its emergency operations center since early March or mid-March, and that involves key city leaders, the mayor, Chamber of Commerce, and a few others from the community, and it's treated, it's a full incident, much like it's being led up by Fire Chief Steve Knuckles. He's been doing a great job. He and his team have created an incident action plan, which is what they do in any big fire or any big incident. You come up with your objectives and you go through the whole planning process, and you basically, sort of mechanize it and create a plan and a methodology to get through it. And we've done that, and they've done a great job. We've implemented numerous numbers of programs and initiatives under the sort of larger banner of Rocks All Together, including financial and economic recovery programs and plans. Some of our leaseholder stuff has been part of that. We've got implemented a short-term fiscal emergency plan. It's a budgeting plan that got implemented that curtailed further hiring and personnel and some spending things, and curtailed all non-essential spending and other things. Created several community assistance programs, one being Morro Bay Cares, and Are You Okay? The initials Are You Okay? Where folks were called every day and checked up on that were maybe at risk in the community. And we had a food delivery and prescription drug delivery program under that for a while. I think that's still going on under the Recreation Department. We've had a Mask Hero program, a lot of sort of public relations efforts to get people to wear their masks and distance and signage. That's ongoing to this day. Again, we talked about our lease issues before, deferred lease. People have been able to defer their transient occupancy tax. The hotel operators have been deferring, if needed, their TOT, and businesses have been able to defer their sales tax payments. Again, I think the city across the board has waived any penalties and parking fees, waived penalties and late fees on any water or sewer fees that they've had to pay and haven't been able to pay. They're not disconnecting water service if people aren't able to pay their water bill. They're not turning delinquent garbage accounts over to a collection agency for payment. We've adopted resolutions prohibiting eviction and price gouging. I think the state did similar efforts as well. We've provided for free transit services. The Community Development Department through Scott Graham went through Coastal Commission and got Coastal Commission okay, in addition to our RV program, allowing outdoor dining and sales to occur out in public spaces, which would otherwise encroach on possible public areas. And so put together a permitting program, streamlined permitting program for that. And you'll see most everybody, all the dining right now is outdoor, out in those public right-of-ways. We've been chalking the Rock parking lot. We did that initially back in March to promote distancing. In other words, make spaces wider than normal 9 feet, which is your standard parking space, and made them 12 to 14 feet to encourage people to park a little further apart, just to keep them apart. And that's helped greatly with just organization out there, in that we don't get the sort of willy-nilly, just people line up in rows starting from the ocean view line on back, which can create congestion and access issues. And it's been great, in that regard, but it's also, kept people a little more distant. So we continue to chalk the Rock at least once, sometimes twice a week, depending on how many people drive over the lines and what the windows. I mentioned earlier, there's been employee pay concessions of 5 to 8% across the board, and the council and mayor have deferred their stipends, the little pay stipends that they get for being on the city council. We've had employee layoffs and hiring freezes. We, we lost a position last year to, it was our part-time administrative assistant. It was administrative technician that left over in direct, I think back in 2018 now. We rehired that part-time into last fall, and that person left for a full-time job elsewhere because she was looking for somewhere to work full-time, and we didn't have anything to offer at the time. And we didn't refill that and towards the end of last year, and then COVID hit, and we've elected not to fill it, and that's sort of our layoff position. Fortunately, we didn't have to lay anybody off, but we've lost a position. And there's been hiring freezes, like I said, budget cuts across the board to programs and services. You know, the rec department is, you know, if you tried to have your kid in soccer or basketball or anything, those programs just aren't existing right now. And people have been laid off. The pool program finally just came back, although it's pretty limited. The city attorney voluntarily cut their fees to help the city with some of the costs there. The city's been working very closely with Erica Crawford, the CEO of the Chamber of Commerce, on various business initiatives, and she and the chamber have been great to help the business community and the city, you know, help businesses avail themselves to the different financial assistance that's been out there. We've been reviewing and trying to reprioritize services and concentrate where the need is needed most, and that's been tough. And again, working with various state and federal representatives and others on the different assistance programs out there, whether they be the PPP program or you know, the CARES Act and or the other federal programs that were put out there. So a lot of activity going on. We meet on the EOC, you know, a couple times a week about rock, you know, congestion at the parking lot and other business concerns in the community. So it's been an interesting balancing act.
All right. Any board comment? Any questions?
Just briefly, and I probably should already know that, but the free transit, is that still going on?
I believe so. I am not sure.
Okay.
I believe so.
Thank you.
Charisse, anything to add?
Okay. As far as COVID response, I know one of the things that we're talking about are master leaseholders, and they're coming at you with possibly reductions or some kind of compensation for following the COVID guidelines. Is there anything that, Eric, that you've talked to anyone about that seems like they're more interested in going in one direction, or is it still all up in the air and you're still taking all the information in?
It's still up in the air. We've discussed, you know, we, as you know, we convened the leaseholder group to initially kind of come up with three potential options, and we brought that to the leaseholders, and Doug Redick and a couple others kind of spearheaded that and kicked it off, Paul Van Beard and a couple others at the Dutchman, and that group is formed. And they started with those three options we gave them, and then noodled on those, and then I don't want to tip the scales or you know, say which way we're leaning. We're really not leaning anywhere at this point. We're still mostly collecting information and ideas on how to move forward and how to move forward fairly and equitably. That's going to be the tough part. So, yeah, we're not, you know, with the exception of, you know, I think we've got a general agreement across the board that not doing any CPI increases or appraisal increases. I think we had three lease sites that reappraised this year. Might have been two. So I think we've got general agreement that we shouldn't be doing CPI increases because the economy was doing pretty darn good, you know, last summer up until January into February when things started slowing down until the shutdowns really started. So there is a increase in the CPI over the year, even though, you know, March, April, May really ratcheted down. I think most of our CPI increases are based on the calendar year anyhow, January, you know, 2019. So 2019 is a calendar year, probably really didn't have any corona economic effects. So there is a CPI increase over that calendar year. So like I said, general consensus to not do those. And we'd be taking that to the city council. And that's probably what we're going to try and do in the next couple of city council meetings, for at least for starters. I think there's general agreement on that. And it's not a huge dollar amount, but it's something. You know, every bit's going to count at this point.
Okay. One of the things that I just wanted to add as far as putting on my HAB hat, I just always worry about the Embarcadero turning into ghost town, kind of like the way that Monterey, Cannery Road turned out during, what was that, 20 years ago? It just, a lot of vacancies. Santa Barbara was kind of feeling that before, just because of the way that they were operating and taking in just larger companies. But anyway, what I'm thinking about is the community of Morro Bay really wants us to have a safe area for everybody to safely be able to participate in either the shopping or the walking or the eating. And I know a lot of the businesses are doing really well, and then some of them aren't doing really well. And one of the things that I've noticed is the ones who are spending a lot of time and a lot of money in following the COVID guidelines, changing their format, moving outside, all of the things that are really costly and kind of a risk for them to take on as far as expenses go, they're the ones that are doing well. So if there's any way, from your standpoint with negotiating things, if there's any way to incentivize for either the master lease holders or the subleasees, that if they spend so much money on making it a safer place with the COVID guidelines and spend the money towards doing that, that perhaps that can have a little bit more of an impact as far as what we can wiggle with the budget in order to incentivize that whole process so it makes it safer on the Embarcadero. And I think that if they do that, they'll find out that because they did it, more people are able to frequent their area and feel comfortable in their spaces. So,
well, interesting you bring that up, and I'm glad you did. One of the talking points with the group is possible, can the cost that people have had to incur to comply with all the COVID requirements, could that be reduced out of their rent as sort of a loan or grant program? I guess you could almost look at it as a grant program, you know, based on what you spent on that. So that is one of the discussion points.
Good. A really positive thing, I think, and anybody can stand behind that as far as making it safe within the community. The majority of the things that I hear online and with the Nextdoor app is all the community members really worried. But what they do need to know is that a lot of the income that the city gets is from sales, and we do need that as far as an economy that can sustain through this pandemic. So we don't want to have a ghost town in order to be safe. There's a way to be safe and still be able to operate as a viable city financially. So, all right.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said, it's been a balancing act, and you're absolutely right. It's you know, we're doing all the efforts we can to make our community safe. I mean, that's obviously our number one, that's the city's number one job, is provide a safe, clean community, right? And so all the efforts we have to do to do that, we're engaged in. But a large part of the city and what it provides is enabled because of the revenue we make from tourism. So it's this diametrically opposed thing that you know, to be completely safe, you don't want the virus brought here. Well, what does that mean? Well, okay, nobody comes here. Well, we can't have that. So how do we balance it? And it's been tough. It's, and you know, we get as a department, and all of the departments that are getting this, you know, you get input both directions from both the community and from tourism. You know, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? You're making us unsafe, versus the opposite. So it's been tough. It's been really hard trying to explain why you're doing what you're doing and how we're doing it. And, you know, it really comes down to, you know, follow the guidance, wear your mask, distance, wash your hands, don't congregate in groups. If everybody would do that, I think make a huge difference. And we've been lucky in this town. And I wish I had the statistics. You asked for that earlier. I wish I had the stats. Morro Bay's, knock on wood, we're pretty low on the stats and in this county because this county's been very proactive in what we've done.
Right. Anything? Thank you, Charisse. Any other comment?
Dan?
I would just like to say what a great job the city has been doing. It has been, like you just said, we're a tourist town. That's our major business, along with fishing. And, you know, the quick response right off the bat, I think, was a big help. I saw the tourism jump as soon as summer, you know, it got closer to summer. And when inlet areas got heated up, a lot of people weren't wearing masks, the tourists. But then you saw that change. And I think it's a lot better now. I mean, there was a short time there where they were doing traffic on one side of the street going one way and the others that didn't really work too well. But everything seems to be doing a lot better. And the amount of cost savings that the city has been doing, whether it's fees, reduced fees, or just pay cuts and everything else, I think there's been a lot of creativity that people need to know about. Just this report right here in B6, I think, should be highlighted for the whole city. I don't hear about this as much as, I mean, I've heard about it, but I think there's a lot of people that aren't aware of how much the city's worked on this. And I would just, you know, applaud them for all their actions, administration, staff, everybody. And obviously, like Charisse was saying, the people on the Embarcadero who are doing well because they went out and they're doing it the right way. And I just hope that, you know, with our year-round good weather, that can hold. A lot of times we'll go out and support a business dining out, and we'll say how nice it is. But I look around and I go, yeah, I don't know how this is going to work when the sun's down at 5 o'clock and it starts raining. So we'll take it while we can. It's a heat wave. People are going to be here this weekend. So anyways, that's all.
Thank you. Any other comment? Eric, I would just indicate one thing that you made a comment earlier that the deferral of the cost of living increase, you may want to look at the impact of an increase being, skipped over the entire length of the lease, because that percentage increase is then not there for next year or the year beyond. And of course, it's also compounding as the years go on over. So the benefit that you would be in granting would be over an extended period of time rather than a relief for their current pain and suffering that they're feeling now. And then once we're all recovered, you know, that relief is over and we continue forward. Just looking at it as in terms of a strict financial impact.
No, that's a good point. I appreciate that. You're right. I mean, if we skip a, it ultimately has to go to the city council.
Yeah.
If we skipped a CPI increase this year, next year when it comes time to calculate, you're going to leapfrog over it and jump right back to where you would have been. You're just not spreading it over. You're spreading it over a couple of years instead of doing a jump all at once instead of over 2 years. So, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I would just encourage just the overall financial analysis of what the impact of the different kind of cuts would be. That would be my recommendation.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on to item B7, we have something in front of us where we currently, the Harbor Board is currently meeting 10 months out of the year, and we've been advised that we're moving to a 9-month meeting schedule. We currently are dark in the months of January and July, so to speak, and those being chosen, one, because immediately following the holidays, there's usually not a lot of things to report. And then, of course, July are twofold. One is we've got the 4th of July holiday, which we would be falling in close proximity of, and also that's sort of the changeover of the fiscal year. So we need to recommend a third month that we would be dark, or we can look at it in general and say we'd like to look at the overall schedule and which 3 months we would like to be dark. I'm going to ask for everybody's input. So I'm going to start with Dana. Do you have any commentary as to which months we should be dark?
Well, I'm fine with January and July, but I kind of agree that December isn't necessarily a bad month for us. Whereas I think this November 5th might be, I don't know, a lot going on with the election and everything. I don't know if that's a November would be a better month than December. That's my input.
Mm-hmm. All right. Charisse, what are your thoughts?
Okay. I was going to go for April, based on we actually already missed it this year. So I feel like, at least for this year, I'd like to get the rest of the months in for the year as much as possible. Also, I always do an extension on my taxes. Maybe it's because we have a HAB in April. Probably not. But so anyway, my suggestion would be April, just because it's a little spaced out more throughout the year rather than 2 months in a row.
Thank you. Lynn, your thoughts?
I think 2 months in a row is too much. So any other month that would not involve that is fine with me.
Very good. Owen, what are your thoughts?
Whatever works best for everybody else and the harbor staff is fine with me.
Okay. Dana, what do you think about April as being the third month?
So we would have February, March, May, June, August, September, October, November, December would be our
correct. That's correct.
Well, I'll do my taxes later than April anyway, so
we're not talking about, I don't believe we're talking about a 2019 schedule. Is that right, Eric?
19. You mean 2020, Mark?
2020, yeah. I was wishing myself back a year.
Well, right now, we're dark. We don't have meetings January, July, and according to our bylaws, December. That's what the council established. Back when they updated the bylaws. So we, and I'll maybe ask for our council liaison to jump in. If we decide on different months than that, what the process is. So that's in effect right now. So right now we're scheduled to be dark in December unless we choose otherwise and then figuring out how to move forward with the process.
Yeah, I think the council is happy with any month that makes sense to you. So I think if you just make a recommendation and say you want to change it, it'll be fine. It's not an issue. I think initially it was just done just based on some understanding of the general workload that was going on. But now it really is up to you. So if you want to choose a different month, I would just recommend that you send a letter and we can put it on the consent calendar and it's not a big deal.
All right. Thank you. Do we have a motion anywhere out there? Or do we want to change it at all?
Okay, I'll put in the motion to change the, what would you call it, cancel date or dark month?
It's dark months, yeah.
Dark month to April rather than December. Period.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a second? All and those Mark, in favor?
Mark, can I interject?
Yes.
Can we do a roll call vote?
We can. Okay. Absolutely. Charisse, how do you vote?
Yay.
Lynn, how do you vote?
Aye.
Dana, your vote, please.
Yay.
And Owen.
Aye.
It appears, and I would vote aye as well. We have a unanimous consent from the quorum to propose the change to be the dark months of January, April, and July. Thank you, board, for a very efficient voting process.
Perfect. So I'll have the chairman, or maybe we'll have the vice chair since you presided over it. Or Ron can walk you through it. We'll just write a short letter to the council through our liaison, and then we'll get on the agenda. And I think it's going to be an issue, and so it looks like we'll have a regular rest of the full calendar this year.
Very good.
Mark, you said January, April, and December, but you meant
January, April, and July is what I thought.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And then again, I'm willing myself forward again, you know? All right. That concludes our business items. We have the declaration of future agenda items. Does anybody have anything they'd like to add for the declaration of future agenda items? Hearing none. I will call for a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second. We shall do a roll call vote so that we may be able to record the vote accurately. Lynn, what is your vote?
Aye.
Charisse, your vote, please.
Aye.
Dana, your vote.
Aye.
Owen, your vote?
Aye.
And Charisse's bear, what is that vote? I also vote aye. It is unanimous. We are hereby adjourned. Thank you very much for attending.
Bye.
Thank you, Mark. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody. Have a good night.